You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's episode, we're talking all about Peacock's first adult animated original series, In the Know, a fun satirical NPR romp. Lauren Caspian is NPR's third most popular host. He's a well-meaning, hypocritical Nimrod just like you and me. He's also a stop-motion puppet. Each episode follows the making of an episode of Lauren's show, In the Know, in which Lauren conducts in-depth interviews with real human guests. Lauren collaborates with a diverse crew of NPR staff. They are also puppets and Nimrods. Joining me to talk about it is stop-motion animator Savannah Steiner and set dresser Casey Englander. A little about these amazing artists. Casey is a stop-motion set dresser and fabricator, sculptor and installation artist. They are a visual creative with deep film experience spanning 15 years. Probably more by the time, some people in the future listen to this. From PBS to Leica's Box Trolls Kubo and Missing Link to Shadow Machine Netflix and Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, one of my favorite movies, and more. Casey knows how to build worlds by hand and collaborate compassionately with fellow makers. One of whom is also with us today, Savannah Steiner. Savannah is a stop-motion animator whose work you've seen on many stop-motion productions, including Pinocchio once again, the recent Chicken Run sequel, Dawn of the Nugget, Tumbleleaf, Tiny Chef Show, and more. She even directed Barbie's first ever stop-motion animated miniseries for Mattel. How cool! Thanks for joining me today. I'm so excited to be interviewing two amazing people.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, I feel like I just learned more about you, Savannah.
Yes, learning.
Before we dive in, I want to learn more about you both. Like, you know, what brought you to stop motion animation? Like, what's your origin story?
Yeah. Well, as a kid, I always was in the arts and performing arts. And when I went to college, I really wanted to go to film school. And originally, I studied live action. My senior thesis was a stop motion animation because no one else was available to help me make an actual live action short film. So I'm like, oh, stop motion, I could do it myself, which I was wrong. But towards the end of my senior year, I ended up having a whole crew helping me finish my stop motion animated short film. And I fell in love with it and tried to pursue it out in Los Angeles. And I finally got an internship at the studio BixPix Entertainment. They were on their first season of Tumbleleaf for Amazon Prime. And there were a lot of Leica animators, some really skilled animators there to help train me up. And second season, they hired me as an assistant animator. Third season, they bumped me to animator. And I've been animating ever since.
Oh, that's incredible. I love when there's like a path you can climb into the role that you want. That's awesome. What about you, Casey?
I had a bit of more of a loose plan. I think I didn't even know what stop motion was. Like, I saw like Rankin Bass's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer from the 60s, I think, like when I was a little kid. And I never connected that, like, oh, the stuff that I make by hand at home could be that, like, is literally the same thing. Like, my mom would make me castles out of cardboard tubes, and I'd be like doing little things in Sculpey, and then I got like a one-way ticket, like in a raffle, to go to my college across the country, where I studied film photography and visual arts, and had some awesome teachers around like experimental film and animation, and stop motion was kind of a specialty in that. And then I followed a partner at the time out to Portland, and then stop motion kind of found me. I feel like it just sort of was a like blessing of fate. You know, I started working in live action and doing documentaries, and then a college classmate of mine, I had been aware of Leica, and a colleague of mine said, hey, why don't you try to be like a art PA here? And I probably interviewed like four times in 2011 and got in, and then kind of worked my way up from there, kind of through the shops and doing some graphic design, landscape fabrication. And then I finally, I kind of saw like set dressing was this really magical confluence of all of the cool shit that we get to do in stop motion, where it's a little bit composition, it's a little bit construction, some fabrication on the fly, and every shot is this new puzzle. And I've been doing it for what year is it? That's 12 years now in stop motion. Through Leica, House Specials, another studio here, Shadow Machine, but just all Portland based. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. Persistence pays off when trying to break into the industry, and it pays off once you're in the industry. Stop motion animation and set dressing, do they interact? Do those roles interact? Because I would assume that, like, once animation starts, there could be problems that arise that need solutions with builders. Can you talk about that?
Yes. I think Casey's job is very, very difficult because they have to make sure that the set, like, every prop is locked down. So the animator, when I'm in there, I'm not, like, elbowing everything and knocking everything out of place. So yeah, I think we have to have a conversation before we start every shot.
Oh, very cool. When looking at a pipeline of stop motion, is it similar to hand drawn or CG where you get the script and then you plot everything out and it kind of everything moves through the pipeline at the same time, or do some scenes get done before other scenes? Because you don't have a ton of people, so how does the pipeline work for you?
The scenes are shot all out of order, definitely. Sometimes I don't know, Casey, you guys have to build a set, and an animator will live in that set, whatever is the office, and whatever shots in that episode are in the office, that's what's going to be getting done, scheduled for that set. And they'll want to wrap that set, in 2 months so that another set can go in. So yeah, whatever sets are made, that's usually what we're scheduled to shoot.
Yeah, I feel like you're touching on the biggest puzzle of stop motion, which is, how do we get this all done? And so we'll make a limited amount of sets to furnish the show. And we'll try to start with our wides, our establishing shots, just so we know where stuff is, so that when we're cutting around a space, we're in the edit, we have some ground and some understanding spatially of what's in there, so that, we go for a close-up. And so, my job is tracking a lot of continuity. And as far as our interaction goes, my busiest days are Savannah's highest turnover days. So if we do really short shots, we'll reframe, I'll move stuff so it looks good on camera, glue it back down with all sorts of toxic adhesives. And then just so that what we want to move, Savannah moves, and everything else doesn't. And kind of in this circle around Savannah's access in the set, it gets locked down far, the closer to her, the more secure it needs to be. The farther away, the less, maybe we use just sticky tack instead of super glue.
Right. Oh, I love super glue. You guys hate me so much. I'm always asking to super glue everything down, and that ruins all of the props. But Casey was saying, if there's a character that needs to sit at a desk and interact with the laptop, opening the laptop up, that laptop will end up being open for the rest of the shot. So mid shot, I have to ask Casey to come in and glue the laptop, so when it's open, it's solid. So I don't bump it, because obviously in the beginning of the shot, it has to be loose so I can animate it, but then I don't touch it for the rest of the shot. So there's constantly communication between us, and putting wax on the desk everywhere is one way if I'm interacting with the props on the desk. But most of the time, I love when it's super glued. I will bump it.
Oh, and of course, whatever I do has to be invisible too. So that's a whole other game in itself.
It's an art. You guys are amazing. I don't know how they do it.
Well, that's you.
I love it. I love the energy and collaboration of all of you. You know, you both, and then also the other teams that you're like also referencing. Mm. Yeah, because I feel like I would be knocking everything over, to be honest. So like, it's cool to hear how you like nail it down, you know, in quotes nail, but
yeah.
And talking about having things stuck to the backgrounds, like there's a lot of props that in set dressing that look like they could be easily knocked over. Like they don't look like they have weight, you know? And I think that's really cool. Cause like, I feel like one of the shots, there's like a newspaper and it's just like, it looks very fluffy, you know? And it looks so effortless, but like you put so much time into everything that shows up on screen. So like, one of the things that I'm wondering is how do you know when there's too much like in the background versus, you know, just enough to like, give influence to like what kind of space this is, what kind of people live in this space and everything. Because the thing I find really interesting about the NPR offices in the series is that I've never seen like what they look like because you only really hear the voices. So how did you like imagine what their offices would look like, I guess?
Oh, that all comes, I think, way ahead of me with our like co-art directors, Sam Levy and Andy Berry, and the production designer, Rob Dessou, and their conversations with Zach Woods and Brandon Gardner, the co-directors, and what they want the spaces to feel like. And you know, how do we make this feel like a place is always the question that melds with the characters themselves. You want them to feel like they're a part of the same world. So that all happens in the design, and then the builds are informed by that. And then by the time it gets to me, I think I'm making choices that are, you know, how can we keep compositionally the focus on the characters, because they're we are in service to the story and the characters. And how can it feel balanced? And my favorite part is like, how can we make this feel lived in? Like, you know, I took some little cues from our workplace break room. There's a workplace break room in the show. And, you know, so you'll leave like a ring from a cup that was there a while ago, or some spilled coffee grounds, or a burnt out outlet with some tape over it that says, no, don't do it. It's pulled straight from our studio canteen. Yeah, you can make little choices that are Easter eggs that some fellow nerds might find. Yeah,
it's so cool. Yeah, like even look at the garbage cans, like it's so artfully decorated with garbage. It looks real.
Yeah, I really love the details, and like, you know, like in the desk, like the wood grain, or like, you know, and this is on the character, like how like texture, like that's the thing about stop motion, is like there's so much textures that you can see, and it's just so rich, and it's so beautiful to look at. And I don't know, I guess I'm just complimenting. Like, I just love that.
Something, so like the more time and money that we have to spend on a project, the more rich those textures can be, the more time we can spend on them. And a show like this, where we're, this was one of the fastest shooting schedules that I've ever worked on. Maybe in a second, Savannah, you can speak to, you know, your experience of time on the show. But for me, you know, we have like a box of all the stuff, and I have to figure out how so quickly to assemble it all. And we use a lot of cheats. So, you know, the closer to camera, the more detail, the more we care. And then some of our, some of our backgrounds are prints that we've taken shots of other sets so that you feel the depth, but we don't need to spend the time, you know, populating them with actual assets. Or it'll be, you know, like, oh shoot, we need a whole other room in there. I'm going to take a couple walls from other rooms that I own on other sets, on other shooting stages, close them together back there, throw some paint so that it looks like the same room, and go. It's,
Yeah, especially if you're doing like a closer shot instead of an establishing shot, you just need something slightly out of focus in the background. So that's really cool that you do that.
Oh, I just think it's amazing because that's not my job. So I just come in after everything's all set up, and some of the sets are just amazing. You'll have just the room with the desk and a window, and then it's like spread out like I don't know how to explain. Like the next behind that desk is like another whole set, but it's just a picture, and then behind that there's like just a prop to make it look more real, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just the depth that they use is just insane. It's just so cool.
And it's all on like clothespins and toothpicks.
Wow.
See, Stan.
Yeah. It's interesting, like how, you know, because like I've heard that stop motion like productions are like really expensive. That's why we don't have a ton of stop motion productions out there. And to hear that, like, you know, sometimes you are kind of like, it's like a lot of DIY when you get into it, you know? So it's really interesting to hear about like how you get certain looks and things going. Yeah. With animation, I wanted to ask about, because like, I think in feature, you know, they have animators that focus on certain characters. Is that how this worked? Or do you get a scene and you animate all the characters like in a CG film?
Technically, for all stop motion films, technically you do just animate every single character. All wow. of the, yeah, because the main character is usually, like, Lauren is usually on screen most of the time, I would say pretty much all of the animators would animate Lauren. And the way we would all come together and try to build his character is when a shot, we look at that shot, we watch it together, we see what's working, what's not working, and we listen to what Brad and, or Brandon and Zach have to say, what they liked, what they didn't like. And that's kind of how we develop the character. We pull from each other's animations. Like there's a quirk that Lauren does and we all are like, oh, that animator really did well with that and executed that. It was funny. They loved it. So now I'm going to take that. And you study the increments, you study that movement, and then you can bring it into your own shots to kind of keep this character consistent. And that's kind of how we build all the characters. We do it all together as a team. Yeah. And it's quite fun, the process.
Yeah, I love that. It really feels like, you know, I used to do improv and, you know, you get inspired by your teammates and like, you know, certain things that, oh, they're taking so many risks, I'm going to do that. And like, you're taking like specific things and like building a character performance together.
Yeah.
Also just feels like an extension of the collaboration when it comes to like the improvisation from the voice actors themselves. Like, I think this show has felt like the least scripted of any I've worked on. Like you were asking earlier, like, where does the pipeline start? For this one, it just feels like it kind of was this organic rolling thing that kept, you know, I don't know, kept growing and changing the more hands that touched it. You know, by the time it gets to us and animators, like it's down to the second, what will be captured. Right. But, but I love to hear Savannah that if that continues too, just with this, like, you know, host of animators that all touch the puppets.
Yeah, it's just so fun. Yeah, the voice acting. When you get, oh my gosh, as an animator, when you get great voice reads, it makes your 8-hour day just go by real fast. Nice. You know, because we're sitting there, we're doing maybe like 200 pictures, or so 100 pictures, because we shoot on twos with a mix of ones. I think that was this show. And so a whole day is just posing 100 poses, you know, and we have to keep it interesting. And with this particular show, working on this show is probably the funnest show I've ever worked on, because you come into work and you're just laughing the whole day. And like Casey was saying, the improvisation is nuts. Like Zach does such a great job in the interviewing these live action celebrities. Just knowing that was unscripted just blows my mind. Like, he's so talented. And as an animator, it makes me feel like I can also be just as like improvisational. And they were very supportive and they encouraged collaboration. And they encouraged when we were just, you know, when we would bring something fresh and new to the table. Yeah, it was just such a funny, the voice reads were just amazing.
Yeah, I think when I, as like a improv nerd, more fan, when I saw that like Carl Tart and Caitlin Riley were both involved in the project, I was like, I'm instantly on board. They're so funny.
Nice. So with like that energy of these reads, how, because like as you were saying with animation and like you have to like get it down to the frame and all this math that goes into like, you know, building a performance, like how do you keep that energy of the read in through that process?
Yeah, you know, to get to the level that the animators on this show had to get to, it's just years of practice and experience of really honing your skills and knowing the basics of animation and knowing how to break the rules. And that, you know, going down to each frame, you can be stuck on one pose for like a few hours and you're like, this is a blink of an eye. The audience won't even see this. So learning how to break that and just, you know, be spontaneous in the moment is a risk and is scary. And normally, you know, fresh animators don't take that many risks. So on this show, I was working with legends, some amazing animators that have been around the block, and I got to learn from them too, and just see how they were breaking the rules. So yeah, it was really fun to get down to the nice increments and just go for it. You know, don't second guess yourself. Just make a big increment, make it funny.
It's so funny how you'll get stuck in those moments where I'm, you know, or I'm guessing like, okay, should the light bounce off this lamp in this way or this way? And it's going to go by so fast. And like our experience of time making a show is just infinity collapsed into a little nugget that people get to watch. It's wild.
Yeah. Our time is like magnified. We obsess over the smallest things, but that's why stop motion is just so brilliant, because we are just paying attention to the details, you know. And we can't go like through on CG, you have passes, multiple passes, you know, you get the animation and then you get the texture and then the lighting and the camera, you know, there's layers. And so for stop motion, it's straightforward animation. Once the director is like, all right, you're done, like go for it, and Casey, it comes in, they check the set, and the camera guys come in and they're checking the cameras, and you know, they close the curtain and the animator left alone, and we just have to, you know, trust ourselves and go for it. And yeah, it's
probably the closest we get to like the sizzle of, you know, like theater or live action in animation is like that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you guys use timing sheets before you go into like the booth and animate it?
Yeah, so we use this software called Dragon Frame. It's the industry software. We pretty much all stop motions productions use the Dragon Frame software. In the software, we have an X sheet, which it breaks down the audio into a waveform. And so each picture, you know, you'll see the line of the picture and you'll see the frame count go up as you take pictures, and it breaks down the audio. So you're literally, your whole day is listening to just chunks of the dialogue. So if I'm saying, "Hello there, Cassie," all day, that's all I have to animate. That's all I'm supposed to say. Like my whole character is just saying, "Hello there, Cassie." My whole day is, "Hello," or "Hello, Cassie." And then finally 8 hours goes by and I finally got "Hello, Cassie." It's literally a breakdown, and that's what the X sheet is. It's a visual representation of that process.
Right. That's really cool that you have that like right there and ready. And like, as you go through, then you see like each frame like adding up, and that, cause I assume you can go back and forth, like looking at how it comes.
Yeah.
And like, I would think being that like 8 hours focused on just like a small part of the bigger picture, like it'd be easy to forget the context or like the bigger, like you were saying, like sometimes you're like in this little scene and it's like, oh, well, you know, I could break a rule here and it won't lose anything in the bigger picture of things. So yeah. Like, how do you remind yourself of the bigger context as you're working? Do you like have any rituals that you do, like listen to the whole thing to refresh yourself?
Well, if it's a very long shot, let's just say like 1200 frames, you're going to be there for about a week. You break it down in chunks. So I pretty much break it down every 25 frames, which is every second. Every second you're breaking it down, and I usually draw a line in the X sheet. We mark up our X sheet. My X sheet looks like a whole new language, like hieroglyphics. it's pretty funny. But us animators will mark our points that we really need to hit, like the beats that Zach and Brandon say, okay, we really want her, we really want Fabian to, you know, brighten up on this moment, have a big reaction. So I'll go in my X sheet and I'll put an X there, or I'll mark it up. However, you know, every animator is very different. But I know that I have to make big decisions here. And so I'll go up on my X sheet and I will give myself reminders that, oh, that moment's coming up. So start preparing for it. You want the antic, you know. So I want to start moving her, you know, in this way so I can get to that movement, to that pose, that specific pose. And so in the X sheet, as I'm taking it chunk by chunk, you know, okay, I'm past the second mark, but I see that I've made a note in another second, this moment's coming. So I start to plan ahead for myself, you know, setting myself up for success to hit these poses. But yeah, my day is literally just in chunks. I can't really think of it as a whole picture. It's too overwhelming. But you know, every so often we have to pull ourselves out and look at it as a whole and watch the animatic again, watch the full thing to know, to watch what we've already animated and make sure we're going in the right direction. And sometimes if we do get stuck, we'll call in the supervisor, like, we'll call in Brian Hansen and say, hey, Brian, I need a new fresh pair of eyes. Can you tell me if this is working? And, you know, and he'll come in and help you get unstuck, or he'll be like, that's it. Perfect. Keep going. And so that's my process throughout the 8-hour day.
And to think that you have to do that for multiple characters sometimes.
Oh yeah. Multiple characters.
Breaks my brain.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And like I said, practice. It's just by doing this so many times, it's in your blood to, I have like my ritual. I go through each character. I make sure I animate one character first, finish that guy. And then I move on to the next character, finish her, move on to the next. And then I push play and watch it all. But I have to finish the character first as I go. Like I will, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
So wait, like, are you animating them all at the same time, or do you composite them after each performance?
Oh yes. So we animate them all at the same time. But what I mean is, when I go in, I want to animate one character fully and make sure that character is perfect. And it's kind of hard to explain because I work in frames. So it is a little hard to visualize what I'm talking about. But once I, like, looking at everything that I shot before, I'm just talking about what I have, like the picture that I'm about to take, that frame, that current frame I'm working on. I want to make sure that I got my pose perfect. And then I move on to the next character. But I haven't taken the frame yet. You know, I haven't taken a picture yet. I'm still, now I'm looking at a different character. Want to make sure that pose is completely solid. Because sometimes, as me, when I was starting out in animation, I would animate this character, pose this character, then press play and see what it looks like. And it didn't look good, right? So I'll keep fiddling with this character, then this character. And I would animate that way. And then I'd be like, oh, okay, it looks great. Take a picture. Let the, you know, them take a frame. But that process is, I feel, that takes more time and energy. I think it's better to just get the one pose done and then move on to the next character. And then you take the frame when you're confident. You're not like second guessing yourself.
Yeah, I get you now. And my brain hurts just thinking about how much planning on the fly that is. No, it was perfect. I just, like, that's so much. Do you, like, do sketches ahead of time to kind of know what you're going to do with a scene for the day? Or, like, are you just making judgments in the moment with, like, you know, just the intentions from the script and the vocal performances?
You know, it's a mix. Some shows want us to do live action reference videos, so we'll act it out. And on In the Know, Zach and Brandon loved watching our live action reference videos, so we would actually act out the shot. Nice. We would record ourselves, and then we would, like, edit it, and then send it to Zach and Brian with the characters' dialogue over ourselves. And, you know, they would approve it. They liked it. And so that's what we would load up to Dragon Frame. And technically, you know, copy, use it as guidelines, what our actions are. And so that was mapped out for us. There are some cases when, and as an animator, you want to spice up the action that you did, like the acting that I did maybe wasn't as good. And I know that as an animator, I can bring the acting out better by just not looking at the video that I did for the reference. So it's a mix. It's a mix.
For the record, the crew also loves watching those labs.
It's pretty silly.
Yeah. I love, like, whenever, like, our team would do that on the shows I've worked on, they're always really fun.
Our studio's pretty small, too, so you'll be, like, I'll be walking from one unit to another with a handful of garbage art. and then, like, Savannah will run through and slam a door, and I'm like, oh no, it's acting. Yeah. Because they're using our workspace as, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be like, I hope they're okay, you know. So, you both are working together, or, you know, with other people who do a similar job. Like, what's the problem-solving conversations like? Because, you know, some things you just don't expect.
Casey, we had a thing that we had to figure out together. The copy machine.
Yeah.
And the leaves. So Casey was the set decorator on one of my sets, and there was this copy machine that was, you know, forefront, right in the camera's view, and the character wasn't necessarily near it, wasn't interacting, not crossing this copy machine, but Casey, after a while, I ended up bumping it. Okay. I bumped it with my elbow and knocked it out of place. And so, you know, in the frame, it's completely different. So Casey had to come in, lock it back down, and they are sitting there for, you know, a good amount of time lining it back up because it's stop motion and we take pictures and we have to line it back up. And so after they did that, Casey is like, I can definitely pull this. You don't need it in the frame. Remember, you're like, yeah, I can take this out, but I'm stubborn. And I was like, no, keep it in. It's totally fine. Like, don't worry. Well, I ended up knocking it again. And in the middle of the shot, it just disappears. Because Casey's like, let's just take it out. Seriously. Yeah. Like, you don't need to struggle. Yeah. And sometimes I just need to listen. I don't need to struggle and keep knocking this thing. And Casey also doesn't want to keep on coming in and lining it back up for me all day.
That is when our friends in VFX can help us out there. Yeah. And they'll just grab a frame from earlier in the shot and plug it back in if no puppets cross it, which luckily was the case.
Yeah.
I think our biggest kerfuffles happen mid-shot when something unexpected moves behind a character that wasn't supposed to, because it will quote chatter in our verbiage, and it'll be distracting because it'll suddenly jump across the screen. I've had harrowing, very tiny, quiet moments trying to get a little, I don't know, curtain to just be posed just exactly the way it was before the elbow arrived.
I mean, I am Casey's worst nightmare. Casey goes in and makes everything beautiful. These set dressers are amazing. They make it look so beautiful. And then the animator comes in and literally just punches and kicks everything. And mid-shot, we're like, sorry, can you fix this for us? And they have to go in and we have our frame, the picture we took, and then the live frame we see in camera toggle. And they're sitting there like with super glue, trying to make sure that they get this lined up perfectly, because if not, this super glue is going to stick and then they're going to have to redo it. And
yeah. And that's how I introduce you to people, is this is Savannah, animator, and my worst nightmare.
Yeah. And I'm sorry.
You know, it's so cool to hear how much, like, you know, glue and sticky tack that you use, but like you can't see it. It's like not noticeable. Like, it's all this invisible work, all like, and, you know, I feel like, you know, it's kind of like good editing and like good everything else is like, you know, it's a good environment and set when you don't quite notice it, you know. And I feel like as craft people, like, we notice it more because we understand how much work goes into all like the frames and everything that you see on screen. Yeah, I don't know. It's just gorgeous. Yeah. I guess that's just another compliment. I keep thinking I'm going to ask a question, and then it's just a compliment.
Yeah, all we do is use hot glue and super glue. That's pretty much what everything's.
Yeah,
everything's tied down with
various glues. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It is interesting paradox to, I feel like it's the same like liminal space that like a non-binary person lives in, is like, I want to be seen and I also don't want to be perceived. So,
so I get that.
Yeah, hold this, you know, beautiful composition, but also like, I also need to not be seen in this because it'll distract from the main thing that's happening. And our rigging department in particular is probably the most invisible art form, because they're the ones that like hold up the puppets as they're, you know, launching through space, and helping them defy gravity, and then they get, you know, composited out at the end. So they're the real, the most
heroes. The heroes. I always say you are as good as your rigging. If you have great rigging, great riggers, I mean, that means you have great engineers. And if you need to figure out how to make this ball leave the character's hand and make the basket bounce on the desk and then hit the dog, how do you do that? Well, you need a rigger to figure it out for you.
Yeah. And Casey, as because you're a fabricator as well, and you build the stuff, right? So like, how, because I imagine that you come across like a lot of things where you may not have had to build before. I mean, the backgrounds in this show are pretty, like, you know, we've seen a lot of offices and rooms and stuff like that. So,
no, I'm just kidding.
But like, how do you, like when you're met with something you've never built before, like how do you do it?
My impulse is always to just turn to folks around me and kind of workshop it out loud. And maybe they've done something similar, or I have done something similar, and we'll build from what we know and then kind of experiment on top of that. So from, if we're developing the look of a new texture on screen, or we need to build a set from scratch, I feel like we rely on some very conventional materials sometimes, and then some very non-conventional materials. So less on this show, because yeah, it's very straightforward, very like known in our world, offices and props in offices. But in past shows, you know, there's my cat meowing. We'll use, you know, construction materials. Say if we're building like a hillside, we'll build it up with, we'll carve some bead foam that's on a plywood carcass. And then depending on whether an animator is going to be on it, then we'll hard coat it with something like Fix It All or aqua resin, or these like, you know, building in our real world materials, but in a small application. And then on top of that, we can experiment with different kinds of materials. I think my go-tos, and why I still really am charmed by this medium, is that often it's like the simplest solution is often the most elegant. So it's like paper and cardboard and like fun foam, or, you know, just melted, or like, I feel like I'm recalling back at another studio, I would be I was dyeing a bucket of cat litter, you know, just like elbow deep in a bucket, just churning some cat litter with some black tint, feeling real grubby. And our like entire board of directors walks by in their suits, and I'm this like mongrel dyeing cat litter. don't look at the monkeys in the zoo here. We get to play and get dirty and I'm not sure I've answered your question, but I certainly...
I don't mind. I like where this has gone. Clearly, very glamorous lifestyle, which we love to hear.
I have a question. Do you guys have a table of, like, found objects? I thought I heard one of you guys talking about that, like, bottle caps, things that you guys have that you can turn into a prop. Do you guys...
Our model shop has a whole, like, cabinet of curiosities with, like, a bunch of...
things you'd find in your junk drawer.
Yeah, it's like this stuff is all round shaped, and it's just a box of treasures. Yeah.
So interesting.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So, you know, stop motion is one of those things that I feel is like hard to practice, you know, like it's, or at least it's very overwhelming to start before you really understand it. So like, if there's someone listening who is really intrigued by stop motion and doesn't know where to start, how would you suggest them like starting to develop their chops?
Yeah, well, as an animator, I would say there are so many tutorials online now. When I was in college, there was nothing on YouTube. There was no social media. Now you have Instagram that have so many tutorials, and same with YouTube. And you really, all you need is just a camera, a computer, a, you know, a desk, and a light. It doesn't even have to be a fancy light. I think the best way to learn animation is a down shooter. So that's when your camera is 90 degrees looking down, and you can, you don't have to fight gravity. So you can really learn increments in like a ball drop, a ball bouncing, you know, you could just use a literal marble, and, you know, wax it to the table, make it bounce. And that's a really great way to just learn the basics. When it comes to character animation, you know, I would say look at the tutorials on how to build a puppet. You can use wire, and it's so easy. It's so easy. Clay. And a lot of times, a lot of people are getting recognized on social media, posting little things on social media also will help out to get seen, and only use it as a tool. Don't get sucked down the rabbit hole and compare yourself.
Please.
Yeah. You can easily do that. But yeah, studying the tutorials that are offered for free online is a great way. Getting a down shooter, you know, studying basics, getting the Richard Williams Animator Survival Kit book is also very helpful. And I think interning at a studio, if you really want to break into a studio, interning, being persistent, emailing them as much as you can. If you don't have too much of a body of work to show, maybe just show your, an animation. The way I got into, the internship that I got, my first ever production, all I had to show was my senior thesis, the short film that I ended up doing by myself. And it was not good animation. The story I love, but not great animation. And I still got in for an internship because I emailed them for like 6 months constantly. And I was like, I'm here. I will clean your toilets, you know, anything. And they saw like the stars in my eyes, and they gave me a chance as an intern. And I proved them. I animated on my lunch breaks, and I was in the test unit after work, and I was constantly working on my craft to become a better animator, getting other animators' eyes on my work to help me get better. And finally, that's when they, you know, they gave me a chance to take on some real shots for Tumbleleaf. And then I started to get actual shots, you know, the small shots, maybe like a cloud rolling or a blade of grass, you know, blowing in the wind. Just simple shots is where I really started. And then they worked me up to character animation. And another way to help, like to help you as a character animator, if you really want to be a character animator, is to study acting. I think that's a huge way, a huge tool for us animators. And Zach and Brandon treated us as actors, which was amazing. The way they talked to us was like I was the actor, and it really informed my animation. So I definitely recommend studying some acting, maybe do some improv yourself. But that will help you grow as an animator as well.
I'm so thrilled to hear that they treated you like actors, because, yes, you know, even people who draw the performances, like, you're the actors, you know? And yeah, I haven't heard that before. So right. I'm thrilled that you had that experience.
Right. Yeah, that was huge. And they're actors themselves. So it was really nice to hear them talk about their way of approaching a scene. Because as an animator, you don't really think that way. A lot of times it's the character is surprised because of this, and you're like, okay, the character is surprised, go to my basic surprised animation. But Zach and Brandon are like, okay, like this is an example. Okay, so you're out on a boat. So Barb is like, what and you're okay. So imagine you're out on a boat in the sea, and you see a huge whale like jump out of the water, and the whale has legs, and then another bigger whale will come up and eat that whale, and you're just sitting there like, what the hell did I just do? You know, like literally, like they're like, get that emotion, like what the hell? And so you're like, wow, that was such a unique way, a very authentic way to like understand what this character, like the absurdity, the funniness of the moment, you know? And so it was very informative.
Yeah.
Fun. Very fun.
That is so bizarre and I love it. So how about you, yeah. Casey?
Remind me of the question.
Totally. The question was like, if, you know, there's a listener out there that wants to start to go down the path that you did, what would do you recommend?
I feel like just play, like get into a play space and a mental play space and get material, speaking from a fabrication standpoint, like get materials that are accessible to you. You don't need to be rich by any means to do what we do on a small scale, and, you know, observe the world or find some art that you really like and want to know how they made it, and like do a deep dive, see how they made it, or try to make that thing yourself in a way that is already known to you, and then put it on the internet, like because when I was same coming up, like turn of the century, the tools that we have now and the sort of democratized nature of media making was not what it is right now. And I think if you're going to a studio and wanting to demonstrate your abilities, like have something to show for it, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be you. It just has to be something. And it could be five things that you made, pulled out of your brain and made and put on a website. And that's more than any like expression of intent or desire that you might come to a studio with all of the passion. But you need to be able to demonstrate that you're a flexible, creative person, at least to start in an art department. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've heard of people making like dioramas, like at like smaller sets to practice and stuff.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, you're, you know, reaffirming that you don't have to be rich to, you know, practice this or go down these paths. And like even, you know, saying that like the top-down shooter with a camera, like Dragon Frame, they do have an app, right, on your phone that you can use so that you can use your phone. So, like, it's more accessible than ever before.
Absolutely, yes.
It's interesting. Like, we're talking about how accessible the medium is, and my brain is also going to a sort of like sociopolitical space about it with our industry, which does not feel as accessible as the medium actually is. Savannah, you and I have gotten to the positions that we are, and personally, that has felt like the snail's pace that stop motion itself is, just because our projects are so long, and there's so few people that do it, that it is this insular, you know, some people use the word family, it's this insular group of colleagues that has very little turnover, and when that turnover happens, it's often filled with an internal hire or someone that they already know, which I feel like I'm soapboxing here, but often the people that they already know might look like them already. And so we have, like, to put a blunt point on it, a very white dominated industry up here in Portland, to my perspective. And so in terms of accessibility, like, depending on who's listening, maybe it's not to the folks starting out, but to the folks that have already received, like, achieved positions of power. Like, keep a mind to not just getting people in the building that don't look like you, but making space for them amongst you in positions of power. I feel like I want to say that.
Yeah. And like that comes, like, you know, talking about mentorship and, you know, at like people like helped you learn more on your way up. And this is like something that, you know, people at the on these shows and movies and stuff, that they don't really get paid to mentor others. Like, it's something that they usually do They need you to do good work, number one, but number two, that they like you and want you to succeed, you know, we all hope, right? So like, how do you make space to mentor those with less experience on these shows and stuff like that?
Yeah, I try to be vocal about it at every turn I get. And also sometimes you do get a colleague, you know, I from live action or outside of our world that comes in, and then they find that actually it's not hospitable for them because it's a space that hasn't been made by or for them, but they were allowed in. And so I think over time our industry will have to grapple with that, and will take some vigil, like some persistent will to keep change, like to try to change the makeup of our industry.
I've had a really great experience. When I see young women animators come in, I love to just, you know, ask them if they need help. I tell them, knock on my door if you need help, which it's really a curtain. But, you know, I'm always trying to make myself accessible, because when I was younger, I had a lot of people come and help me out. And a lot of people made me feel comfortable. The first studio, Tumbleleaf, Pix, it was half women, half male. So that was actually really exciting. And we had a lot of female animators, I think, on In the Know and even on Pinocchio. And it was really great to see that, you know, because that is fresh. It's great to see that's what's happening.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's part of, you know, it's a huge reason why this podcast exists is like, you know, all the conversations I was having on my way up and getting to share that with others who don't have access to people who work in the industry, I felt like was really important. So like, I appreciate you both coming on the show and like talking about all of this and using your experience to inspire people, you know?
Yeah. Yay. Well, thank you for letting us inspire.
Of course. But before we go, two things. I would love to hear your best NPR host impression.
My butt. Can I pivot and
sure.
Just my best impression of my favorite like public radio jingle?
Yes.
It's forever in my brain, the old Morning Edition song that's like, it's jazz sax, I think. It's like, and then chimes.
Oh, I love it.
I guess you've been listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast with Casey and Cassie and Savannah. Hope you were inspired.
I love it. I especially love that in the show, like Lauren gets really close to the microphone and it's just so perfect and reminds me so much of Ira Glass and everyone else that was ever on the show. And also the like the little like rough voice is so good. I am so obsessed funny. With it. When like in the first few minutes when that was nailed, I was like, I'm so into this.
Oh, he has what was it? Wet vowels?
Oh. I'm like, yes.
How do you describe wet vowels? How is that?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I was also admiring, so we are wrapping up, but I have one thing to say. So with Lauren and like I loved the puppet's mouth and eyes. I thought it was so cool. And like the hands are so expressive. And I think I've heard it before where like the hands, you get a lot of secondary expression for like whatever they're saying. And I don't know. I was just pretty obsessed with it. I love that like he had like multiple like, you know, cheek lines. Because I feel like we always try to keep it simple in character design. And I thought that adding the extra like humanness to the puppet really like it expresses even more about the character, you know.
Yeah, his mouths were face replacements,
and so that's so perfect.
His lines, you know, hid the changes of the face, the mouths.
Yeah, and,
perfect. I wondered about that
example of necessity informing design.
Yeah, and like the hair was like it didn't look like fluff. Was it a hard piece?
It was like silicone.
Silicone? Oh, very cool. Yeah, it looked hard to me, and I was like, oh, interesting. Because usually, like, you try to get the texture, it feels like. But, I just love with stop motion how everything is thought through so well, you know.
Oh, to the detail.
hats off to all of you.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, I can't wait for y'all to see the show.
Yeah. And it's by the time this goes up, it'll be out.
Oh, I can't believe, I'm so glad you watched the show then.
Yeah, I got to see it. It was, thank you.
If really we're good. In the future, talk to your listeners.
Yeah. So last question, who is inspiring you lately? It can be people, books, movies, TV, games, anything, just anything you want more people to see.
The first person that came to mind is Amanda Strong from Spotted Fawn Productions up in Vancouver, BC. They are a studio that is making stop motion shorts, maybe longer form projects, but they all center Indigenous stories and First Nations writers and voices, and they've made a couple shorts so far, and they're it just seems like they're just, I want to uplift them, and folks, like, go support them, follow them, watch what they're doing, because that's a very underrepresented part in our field, and they are just making some really, really beautiful stuff.
This stuff is beautiful. I just Googled it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so moody and textured and just like otherworldly. And I love that.
Yeah. And we have a ton of colleagues that from Portland that have gone up there across the border to, you know, work and volunteer their time and also, you know, just make those worlds what they are and mentor and, yeah, it's very cool to, I just want to see more, more studios and outfits like that, popping up. So whenever I see one, that's what's inspiring me lately is like, yes, you can do it too.
I love that. How about you, Savannah?
Yeah. I guess mine's not as artsy. I will say Spider-Man across the universe. That
so good.
That whole series. Yeah. Oh, amazing. And so inspiring in the animation world. But as for like, you know, as for it, maybe, okay, so this podcast, I love it so much. It's a health and wellness podcast, but it's been very, very helpful for me. I love listening to On Purpose with Jay Shetty. He's been my favorite podcast so far, listening to him, just, you know, about health, mental health and wellness. And I think that's important, especially in, you know, our industry. It can get really tiring, and you know, sometimes for some animators the novelties wear off and it's not, you don't have those stars in your eyes, and it's good to remind yourself that this is a very awesome and amazing opportunity that I have to be grateful every day that I get to work with people like Casey and other talented artists. Aww. And you know, sometimes you get in your head, and I think that On Purpose with Jay Shetty has helped me get out of my head. I think there's some really great topics that he talks about. So
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. I just Googled that one too. And I'm like, yeah. I'm on board. Like, I love that. Cause yeah, like as much fun as it sounds like you both had, like, it also sounds very stressful, especially like on a short timeline. So I'm glad that you guys are taking care of your wellness and sharing that now.
Yeah, podcasts also super important for in my work days. I'll be like, you know, sprinkling some dirt on a set artfully and
some cat litter.
Yeah, some cat litter. And I love like an improv, like Off Book, the improvised musical podcast, or the Neighborhood Listen, or like, yeah, talk about like improv uplifting your spirits while working on a fun project, even though it's stressful in your work day. It really pulls you out of your head and your ego.
Yeah. And sometimes when I don't have a shot with dialogue, maybe it's just, you know, an action, I'll throw on a podcast and I'll be able to listen to the podcast as I'm animating, and you know, it helps me get through the day.
Nice.
If it's a boring time. We all get boring shots.
I'm so thankful that happens.
Once you get bored of music sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. And like when I was starting out, I listened to like a lot of animation podcasts or illustration podcasts. And so like when at the point of my life where I was like, okay, I feel like I have I know what I'm doing a little bit. So maybe I'll listen to some fun podcasts. And honestly, it was so helpful, you know? Yeah. So, but yeah, thanks so much for sharing all of that, as well as your experience on In the Know. It's been fantastic to talk to you all. And I know we got like super craft in heavy in a few areas, but like, I really loved it. I love talking craft and shop and everything. Yes, and
we did like
too. Us too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Fun. Such You're a great so, show. Like,
yeah, I hope I get to work with you both someday, because like, yeah, you just seem like you really know what you're doing and your work speaks for itself. And I love all your photos of like you in the sets, and like those are like my favorite photos, like the types of photos, yeah. Like
behind the scenes.
It looks like a normal scene and then you're a giant and it's amazing.
Oh, that puts it in perspective.
Yeah. Zach and Brandon both got to have that moment like on the show. It was with like, you know, COVID bringing in these like virtual ways of connecting workspaces, like, you know, they would be zoomed in to an active stage, and they'd be like, we want to change the puppet's eye line. Let's move the monitor a little bit. And, and you know, Jared, our scheduler is like, okay, here's your live view. And then they'll see my other, like, giant hand come onto screen, and they went, whoa, we didn't know that's, whoa, we've never seen this before. We didn't know that that's the scale. And, you know, and then my little hand is trying to get the monitor just where they want it. Yeah.
When they came to visit the studio in person, I remember Zach came onto my unit on my stage as I was animating. And it was my first time meeting him. And I mean, his face dropped. He was like, oh my gosh, it's just a bunch of C-stands and a beautiful set. And it just, the lighting guys had to make it look like a real office. And you're just in a little black box. And his face was priceless. And he just, his expression was just in such gratitude. And he was like, wow, this is stop motion. This is amazing. I'm like, yeah, dude, it's your show. It's what we're doing. Yeah. It's pretty great to see them, you know, love it as much as we do.
Yeah, that's incredible. Especially hearing like live action people with like mostly live action background coming into animation, sometimes you get a little worried, but it's always nice to see the overwhelm that how special animation actually is, you know. Like, I'm so glad that they got to experience that, because it's truly what keeps me around, you know.
Yeah, hopefully there's more to come.
I hope so.
And we're always eager to share with people that magic of like, it's tiny stuff in a real place. Because we rarely get to share it, because, you know, our projects are so long and we're not allowed to talk about them until they come out. And then even when they come out, it's kind of, yeah, we can rarely share the behind the scenes stuff. So. Yeah. Well, always down to talk shop.
Nice. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. For everyone listening, you can watch In the Know now on Peacock. Again, Peacock's first adult animated original series, and I hope there's more to come. Thank you again for coming on the show. This has been a blast.
Yeah, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
Ink and Paint Folk is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. This episode was produced by me, Cassie Soliday. Music by Dominique Parker. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.